Hello, neighbors. This is Curtis Stone, owners at Bay Lake Tower, and you're listening to My DVC Points.
Parents and the children could have fun together.
Please board quickly and safely. Our monorail will be departing momentarily.
Welcome to the My DVC Points podcast. Join the conversation as DVC members share their stories, personal preferences, and magical memories. Your reservation is confirmed, your fast passes are booked. Pull up on the yellow strap because our journey into the magic of membership is about to begin.
To infinity and beyond.
Now, here's your host and curator of magical stories, Chad Pennycuff.
Welcome to episode 4. Today we have a very special episode. Our primary focus is normally talking with DVC members about their stories and their experience. This meet the member approach builds community and offers us additional insights as to how other families do Disney. In today's show, I'm introducing a brand new segment that'll be recurring, where we take a slightly different approach to maximize our membership. Instead of meet the member, we're going to enhance our next trip home with a segment I call Meet the Magic Maker. This is where we talk with former Disney cast members and industry insiders who can share their knowledge, information, and experience that is directly related to our Disney vacations. In these interviews, I seek out people who in some way left their fingerprints in the parks and the resorts. They all have something unique and special to share. Today, I'm pleased to share a conversation with legendary historian Jim Corcus about the history and backstories at one of my home resorts and one of my favorite resorts, the Wilderness Lodge. Jim is a former cast member at Disney in numerous roles. One of his former roles was a tour guide covering the Wilderness Lodge. Jim has so much information, we have to divide this into two segments. Without further ado, let's welcome legendary Disney historian Jim Corcus to the show. Hey, Jim, Chad Pennycuff. How are you today?
Good. I did my prep. I'm all set. In fact, this is great. I'm going to love talking about the Wilderness Lodge. It's one of my favorite Disney resorts. It's just overwhelming.
I have to agree with you. It is one of my favorites as well. The fact that it's an actively marketed property right now. Mm-hmm. I talked last week with Russ from DVC Info, and he's telling me that his Google searches on his page hits on Wilderness Lodge and Copper Creek, even Boulder Ridge, are just through the roof right now with people doing research on this topic.
Is that because so many people want to consider going there? Or
it is.
Because again, you know, it is. It's magnificent, and I like it. Again, however, there are also disadvantages. It's not on that monorail route. You have to make that extra effort to get to the Magic Kingdom or somewhere else there. I always tell people that one of the differences in a Disney theme park is it's not just a physical experience, it's an emotional experience. And that's why no matter what Universal does or SeaWorld or whatever, and no matter how well they do it, and they do things really well, nobody seems to match the emotional experience that you get being on a Disney property. And it's much the same for a Disney resort, especially like the Wilderness Lodge. There's such attention to detail. There's such an ambiance and a sense of storytelling. And I think, sadly, an awful lot of people who go to the Wilderness Lodge don't consciously recognize what is happening there and what a seamless experience it is. It's often just taken for granted. I know that when I turn off of World Drive onto Timberline there and you start to go, within the first couple of seconds, you realize you're no longer in Florida.
No, you're transported.
You're seeing landscaping. You're seeing, and when you're there, you know, you can look to your left and your right and the back and all of that. You don't see anything. The castle is just a few miles away. You should be able to see Magic Kingdom. But what happens is you are now immersed in this experience of being in the Northwest. Everything, all five of your senses are being manipulated to tell you that you're really in a different place and in some ways a different time period. What's amazing to me is that even with the expansion that has happened, first with the Boulder Ridge Villas and then now with Copper Creek, it still blends in together, that the Imagineers have been able to maintain linear timeline for this entire area, even though it's three distinct locations with three really distinct, even though they're connected, three distinct storylines, and yet it all just works together. And it's like, holy cow.
Yeah, the Imagineers at this resort just knocked it out of the park. And you already hit on one of my favorite things of it. Shelby mentioned it in episode one as well, that you can be at Wilderness Lodge Resort and all the hustle and bustle of the Magic Kingdom is right around the river bend, so to speak. It's just a real quick boat ride, but you're completely immersed and away from that.
I've had friends who have been to the national parks, and they said, my gosh, you, when you show up at Wilderness Lodge, that's the exact same experience you're going to get, except you've got greater guest amenities, and it all just seems to work a little smoother without any of the disadvantages. You're not worried about being bitten by a bear.
You got to love that one.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about the history of the lodge.
Well, that's the interesting thing is that we were talking about the fact that, you know, these are three separate locations. The Boulder Ridge Villas, of course, represent the building of the Transcontinental Railroad. And basically what happens is the railroad workers need some place to stay. So they're building, you know, that location for them. And, in fact, even in the Boulder Ridge Villas, you see indications of that. You know, even when you go into the lobby, it's designed like a train roundhouse. You know, that's what that is, and it transitions you into different directions, just like a train in a roundhouse would head off into different directions. And you've got the Carrollwood Pacific Room, which used to be the Iron Spike Room. And then right next to it, you've got the Wilderness Lodge, which represents the lodges that once the train started bringing out tourists and all, they wanted to come see the national parks. They needed some place to stay. So you have these magnificent lodges, which we'll be talking about. And, of course, the Wilderness Lodge is very specifically designed to be reminiscent of the Old Faithful Inn at Yellowstone, but also the Awanahee Lodge in Yosemite. I see oftentimes that people just refer to one or the other, but it has both of those elements in there. And then the latest is, of course, Copper Creek, which takes place decades later, which is when people no longer use the railroad. They're using cars, they're using planes, but so what they're doing is they're taking a look around, and here's these leftover things from the railroad, and you're using this to build new living spaces. As wonderful as that storyline is, the whole storyline of Wilderness Lodge actually took place almost as soon as Walt Disney World opened in 1971, because, you know, everybody was expecting another Disneyland. But it was Walt's concept, not just the experimental prototype community of tomorrow, but that this was going to be a vacation destination. So this was not some place where you would go for a couple of hours, or some place you would go for a day, or maybe 2 days at the most. This was something that you were going to spend several days. You were going to spend a week. And so there were going to be all these different things besides just
the parks,
a theme park, an amusement venue, and there needed to be a place for people to stay. So Disney got into the hotel resort business, and when Walt Disney World opened, you had the Polynesian Village Resort, you had Contemporary Resort, and then in November of 71, you have Fort Wilderness Resort and Campground, and on the planning books are three more resorts that were going to be built within the next 3 years. You were going to have the Asian, you were going to have the Venetian, and you were going to have the Persian. But what happened is in 1971, when Disney opened, the majority of people went to Walt Disney World by car. You know, there was no Orlando International Airport. That didn't exist. There was McCoy Airfield, and part of that was still being used by the military. And that's why when you have baggage tags going to Orlando, it still says MCO on them, because it refers to McCoy Airfield, which is what it was. But in 1973, you've got the Arab oil embargo. And so that cuts people driving to Walt Disney World because it's becoming so expensive. And so attendance is dropping 25%. And so Card Walker, who was the chairman of the board there, said, look, it doesn't make sense. We're losing money here to invest more in more hotel resorts. And in fact, even in the 70s, it was announced that there was going to be a lodge area because they felt that people would like that Western theme, that outdoor theme, but that Fort Wilderness might be a little too rustic for some people.
Well, not everybody's campers, right?
Not everybody's campers, which is why you've got, that glam camping that is very popular these days. So they had already started clearing land there. They had already started clearing forests for this unnamed lodge. And by 1980, they'd come up with a name for the lodge. It was the Cypress Point Lodge, because you've got cypress trees, right, around
there. That makes
sense. And so you were going to have the Cypress Point Lodge, and it was going to be this Western-themed hotel. It was going to be about 550 rooms and 50 log cabins on the beach. We've got those cabins now as part of Copper Creek, but back there in the 70s, they were planning on having those separate 50 log cabins there on the beach. Two restaurants and a pool and all of this create this sort of
that's a fascinating
forest harmony environment there.
Yeah, that's a fascinating concept. I've always thought that the Copper Creek cabins,
mm-hmm.
their attempt to fix what they didn't get quite right in Poly. Okay? And you're telling me that...
I think you're right on the mark there.
That the cabins are originally from back in the original designs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, and in fact, we know that for a fact because... I don't know if any listeners are old enough to remember this. I'm old as dust. People say, "Oh, but you're such an authority on Disney history." And I said, "Unfortunately, I've lived most of it. That's why I know some of these things." The Magic Kingdom used to have an attraction called the Walt Disney Story, and at the end, they had little models of coming attractions, and so there was a whole model for the whole Thunder Mesa development that was going to come into the Magic Kingdom, but they also had a model of Cypress Point Lodge. So you could see this. But what was happening, too, is you've got Epcot coming up, and Epcot is the largest private construction project in the world at that time when that happened, and there were constant cost overruns and all of that. So Bing... Cypress Point gets canceled, you know. Epcot is bleeding money. We've got to do that. But in 1984, you got Michael Eisner coming on board. And he's taking a look, and he's going, look, we're going to get increased attendance there, you know, at Epcot. We've got plans to expand, you know, and monetize the rest of this property here. We need, you know, resorts to handle these people, which, of course, is where Swan and Dolphin came from, because Disney had gotten out of the hotel building business. So Eisner's philosophy was, we'll watch somebody else build this so we can learn and see what they're doing. And they're already investing their money. We're not risking any money here. And we still own the land and the whole bit. So we're still in control. And once we see that, then we'll expand. And so his idea was, okay, land and infrastructure had already been set for the Asian resort. They had even a pad that extended out into the Seven Seas Lagoon. But
now, where was that at?
Here's the punchline. The road was called Asian Way, by the way. Eisner took a look and said, I don't think people are going to come to an Asian resort, because it was going to be there to theme into Adventureland. We'll build the Grand Floridian there.
Okay.
We'll do this resort that is very much like the grand hotels that, you know, were on the railroads in Florida, that Flagler built all those beautiful hotels. We're going to build one in the same way, and we can make that a deluxe resort. And so all of that prep that was done for the Asian resort, that went, and the Grand Floridian was built. And he took a look at Cypress Point Lodge, and again, Eisner is the money guy. Let's do a premium experience. Let's not just do, you know, an extension of Fort Wilderness. So that's where Wilderness Lodge came from. And of course, Eisner at the time was really romancing top architects like Robert Stern and all of that, because Eisner's philosophy was, if we bring in these great architects and we give them some freedom so that they don't feel that they constantly just have to build Mickey Mouse things, if we give them this freedom, there are people from around the world who will come to see the work of these architects. And for the Wilderness Lodge, He connected with Peter Dominick Jr. Dominick was an outdoorsman. He had a great passion and an understanding for the great outdoors and all of this. And so Eisner felt, this is going to be the perfect fit, and we'll put together a team. They'll go out and they'll check out all these national park things so that they can create something similar.
Authentic, and, right?
Right. And again, what Eisner was looking for, that what Dominick had sold him on, what was known as rustic architecture. Stephen Mather, who was the first director of the National Park Service, felt that the national parks are so beautiful as they are, that if you're going to build a building, if you're going to build something on the national park, that building needs to organically blend with the park. You need to use building materials that are indigenous to that area. So the art and the architecture and the landscaping, all of that should blend together, you know, so it's not that this is just standing out. So Robert Reamer, who designed the Owanahee Lodge, he did exactly that. And in fact, if people Google this or... I'm so old-fashioned, I still have books. If you look through books and you take a look at pictures of the Owanahee Lodge, you go, wait a minute, that's the Wilderness Lodge. I can see the same design of the roofs and the flags on top. What they did is they didn't reinvent the wheel. They adapted what was already in existence.
Well, and, imitation is the highest form of flattery.
There you go. So basically, what Dominick was trying to do was he was trying to create the ultimate log cabin, really. And you would have natural lighting. You would use natural limestone, other type of building materials for this. Just for the interior, they brought in 85 loads of lodge poles. And these came from what were called standing dead forests. In Oregon and Montana. And what a standing dead forest is when a tree is dead, believe it or not, you can't tell whether that tree is dead. Out here in Florida, where people wanted to expand things and all that, they actually have to bring out a specialist to go and determine if the tree is dead. And a tree can be, what causes a tree to die is insect inside there, or like when Mount St. Helens exploded in Oregon there, and you had all that soot and that dust that kills the nutrients. And so no living trees were chopped down. Those are real trees in the Wilderness Lodge, but no living trees were chopped down to do that. And Disney, being a good guy, the Disney company actually, for every dead tree they took, they replanted trees so new trees would grow. And basically, if you stretch those lodge poles end to end, that would be about 40 miles long.
Holy.
And, yeah, I know. Amazing, isn't it? And there's a whole story. As I said, I love the Wilderness Lodge because there's a whole story there. Because in the lobby, that's dedicated to Native Americans. So you won't see elements of, like, cowboys or explorers or anything like that. You only see Native Americans. And when you go into the Whispering Canyon Cafe, now you're seeing the introduction of cowboys and cowboy imagery. And when you go to Territory Lounge, that's the explorers. And then when you go to Artist Point, that's when things finally got civilized. That's when the artists came out. And so you have these beautiful murals done in the styles of the great Western painters. And, of course, Artist Point is towards the edge there so that you can look out and you can see these vistas. You can see these views throughout the windows there. So in the lobby, this is devoted to Native Americans. So on the floor, again, you're using all these natural elements. So you've got wood that is Brazilian cherry, white oak, bird's eye maple, walnut, whatever. And take a look at the design. It mimics a Native American Hopi rug. And that rug tells a creation story. Now, you won't notice it when you're standing on it, but if you go up to the fourth floor or whatever and you look down at the lobby, you see it's a Indian rug. And basically, there's the center of the earth, and that's usually where they stick the Christmas tree each December. And from it, there's four rivers in sort of a lightning pattern, and those are going to the four corners of the earth. And the four corners of the earth are where the lodge poles are, because they are going upward to hold the canopy of the sky, which is really cool.
You have just given me a half an hour of just looking around the lobby at my next trip home.
And this is just the very beginning. And again, here's something, and I would never advise people to do this because it's unsafe. So don't do this. Don't do what I'm saying right now. I used to give tours at the Wilderness Lodge because I was part of Disney Adult Discoveries, which did Disneyana seminars and did the backstage tours like Backstage Magic and Hidden Treasures of World Showcase and all that. At the lodge poles, because they're standing dead trees, if you touch them, they're room temperature, they may be a little warmer. You'll notice that sometimes there's a gap between the lodge poles. You should never do this. But if you stuck your fingers through there and you touch the center pole, it would be cold because that center pole is steel and concrete. That is what is holding things up. So it's that old Imagineering thing of where you can touch something, it needs to be real. So when you're on Main Street, if you're touching railings or whatever, that's iron. You know, that's not fiberglass. But once it gets out of your reach, Imagineers can use anything because your mind is already telling you, hey, this is real. You know, this is real, what we're touching right here. And there's more to tell you about those lodge poles and the contribution of William Robertson, who I think is, again, one of the unsung heroes of Disney and certainly of the Wilderness Lodge. But I also want to mention that since this is Native American, one of the things that Disney used to do, and again, these things disappear so quietly. Disney never lets you know when things are going away. They figure if we don't say anything, people won't pay attention and won't be there. When the lodge opened in November, they had the blessing of the four directions. Okay?
Okay.
And so they had Native Americans, James Hansen, who was Black Wolf, and his wife Anita, who was named Quicksilver. They would come in and they would do the Native American traditional blessing of the four directions, east, south, west, north, and that drives out negative energy and purifies the area for a year. And then the Hansons and they brought in Native American musicians that would play, and the Hansons would sit there and they would tell stories and they would answer questions about Native American culture. And they did this every single year, you know, on the anniversary of the opening of Wilderness Lodge. Last ceremony was held in 2009. I saw it, and it had shrunk in magnificence since the earlier ones. But it was still, you know, such a neat idea. But
any reason why they would have stopped that?
Well, apparently the Hansons had gotten older, and so they decided they no longer wanted to travel. Disney just decided they didn't want to try and find an alternative. They could have found, you know, other groups who would want to come in and do that. But so I guess what this means for those of you who are Googling, you know, Wilderness Lodge and all that as a place to stay, remember that it has not been pure since 2009, according to Native American tradition.
I'll keep that in mind, but, you know, I'm still going to fight for it.
At Disney, everything is a collaboration. That's even with animation. You know, when you say something like, well, Mark Davis, you know, he did Tinkerbell and all that. Yes, he did, but he wasn't the only one who animated Tinkerbell. He was the key animator. He was the lead animator, and he did, you know, major design work, but other people contributed to it. And the same thing happens in the parks, and so it's a collaborative art. But there are some things done at Disney where the individual just really stands out, and William Robertson is one of them. He's a sculptor, and he studied under Blaine Gibson, who did the partner statue and did the audio animatronic figures for Pirates and Haunted Mansion, all that. One of the things he did when he worked at Disney was he did topiaries, and including one of the topiaries he did was that 14-foot bison, you know, that's out in the front of the Wilderness Lodge. And one of the things that I really love and people never pay attention to is if you look at the walkway, embedded in the walkway are bison footprints, and they're heading directly in the direction where that topiary is. Well, And Robertson later went on. He did the topiaries in that Johnny Depp film, Edward Scissorhands. But he got to the point where he left Disney, as a lot of people do. But Disney called him back not only to do the topiaries at Wilderness Lodge, but to do those carvings that are on those lodge poles.
Really?
And if you take a look, there are four different levels, and they correspond to animals living in the wilderness. So at the lowest level, you'll see carvings of the creatures of the field, like turkey, raccoon, squirrel, rabbit. The next level, you'll see animals, because again, you've got those four lodge poles there, so you've got four. The next level is the animals who might be on the lower mountain, like a wolf or antelope or a bison, you know. On the third level, you have the animals that are on the high level of the mountain, like a mountain goat and sheep and a bear. And then the highest level, you have those birds of prey, like the falcon and the American eagle and the hawk. And it took 4 tons of wood to create those creatures. You know, and it was 10 days to carve each one of those animals. They are hand-carved. They are not fiberglass. He took a rotary saw and a chisel and a hammer and, the traditional things that you would do. He had done up some drawings, and every day for months he would climb up on scaffolding and carve an animal. And it was more difficult than you imagine, because this is real wood. So he has to work around knots and rotten spots and things like that. But he wanted to do something that would show off the hands of an artist. So even though guests don't recognize this, I think you get that sense.
Oh, absolutely.
He didn't just do that. Underneath the at the check-in desk, you've got those 6 brass animals. Those are Robertson's sculpture. And you know why those animals are there?
No, tell me.
It's for kids.
Oh,
because you see how high that counter is, so when a kid is brought to that counter, he's looking straight up, he's seeing nothing. And so the animals were placed there for the kids, and also to introduce them into that concept of this is the wilderness. And so these are friendly animals over there, and if you'll notice...
No birds of prey there,
The tops of the heads are sort of being worn away, because that's where the kids are petting them. And another thing you don't notice, a sculpture that he did, is when you go into those elevators, there's the rails. If you take a look, those rails are actually sticks of wood. They're done in brass, and they're being held by 2 beavers in their mouths. And the beavers, again, sculptured by Robertson. But the most fun thing, of course, was that he was the one that carved that totem pole that's outside the Mercantile gift shop that has Mickey Mouse, Goofy, Donald Duck, and Humphrey the Bear. And it just always makes me smile. It was just something he did for fun, because Dwayne Pascoe did the totem poles, and we can talk about those. But that character totem pole, that was done by Robertson. And the reason you got Humphrey there is for 2 reasons. First off, the Wilderness Lodge is the only resort to have an official mascot. And the official mascot is the brown bear. And you'll see images of a brown bear throughout. You'll see brown bear claw prints embedded in the walkways. Actually, if you go out and stand by Fire Rock Geyser and look back at the main center of the lodge up on the 2nd floor, you'll see that the windows and the extension of the balcony and all that, that is the face of a bear. And at night, it's very... Bears can be really fearsome. I don't know whether I'd want to meet a bear in the wood. And should I try to pretend that I'm dead, or should I try to make myself bigger? Should I just run away? And again, it's like the rule of thumb I was told when I got down here to Florida, because I was worried about alligators and all that. And they said, Jim, you don't have to worry about alligators. You only have to run faster than the person you're with. So I guess that's the same thing with a bear, as long as you're running faster than the person you're with. So, but for kids, bears are kind of scary. So you're introducing Humphrey the Bear, who's this lovable, overweight bear, and if you saw his cartoons, and I love his song, In the Bag, Putting It in the Bag, bum-ba-dum-ba-dum. He lives in the fictional Brownstone National Park, so that also themes in with the national park concept idea. That's why Humphrey is there. And sometimes there's exclusive Humphrey merchandise that is sold only there in the Mercantile store. In fact, you can get key rings and things like that that actually duplicate the totem pole out front. But if you're really sharp, take a look around the resort. And in fact, when you're driving into the resort, right before you come to that big archway, look over to the right, and there's this round metal sign, and it has silhouettes of Mickey Mouse being followed by Humphrey the Bear. And at the entrance to the Boulder Ridge Villas, there's another sign. It's on your right. It's up a bit, and you have a silhouette of Mickey walking, and behind him is a silhouette of Humphrey riding on top of the old-fashioned, you know, penny-farthing bicycles, because it's marking the bike crossing path there. Humphrey, only seven characters, and only seven Disney cartoon characters, had their own theatrical cartoon series, which means, you know, at the beginning of the cartoon, you see the character's face, and they have their theme song and all that. Humphrey was the last one to do so, starting in 1956, and sadly, that was the wrong time for that to happen, because Disney was getting out of making short cartoons, because they weren't running them in movie theaters anymore. They were running the double features. They didn't want to pay for any additional things like newsreels and short subjects. So Humphrey's a good guy. He's over at the Magic Kingdom now, over there at Dumbo's circus, but he is the mascot there of Wilderness Lodge. And
that's even something else to look at in the gift shop. Now I know to go look for Humphrey over there at the Mercantile.
There's a wonderful feel about the whole lobby and all this. It's both intimate and spectacular at the same time. One of the things that I love, of course, is the fireplace in there. At the Grand Canyon, they have the Bright Angel Lodge, and they've got a fireplace that was made, that was quarried from layers of the Grand Canyon. But, you know, leave it to the Disney Imagineers to sort of up that experience, to enhance it, you know, to plus it. That's the term that
Disney plussed always, it. Yeah.
And in fact, that came from Walt, because Walt, of course, only had 1 year of high school. So he didn't use these fancy words. So he knew that to plus something, you know, gave you something more. So plus meant that you were adding to it. So he would use the word plus as a noun, and as an adjective, and as a verb. You know, we need to plus this, you know, which basically means give it something more. So the fireplace there in Wilderness Lodge is 82 feet high, and it's a replica of the south rim of the Grand Canyon. Disney actually sent out a paleontologist who also happened to be an artist. His name was Robert Reed, R-E-I-D, for those who are looking these things up, to actually study the Grand Canyon. And so he made these, there's a huge notebook, and he's made color designs and things like this. And so when you go in there, you are seeing this is exactly 1.6 million years worth of layers, because it's done in the same proportion. So if a section of the Grand Canyon was 50 feet and another section was 70 feet thick, they're duplicating that same proportion. So you're seeing the same materials. You're seeing the same, you know, you go up to the fourth floor in the sandstone there, you can see worm burrows and trilobite trails and all of that. And by the way, the fossils you see in there, real fossils that predate the dinosaur era. So they are embedded into the fire. Yes. So again, you know, this is why nobody can really duplicate the Disney experience, because Disney does this attention to detail and does this
so well. It is just, yes. The execution is just so thought through.
Right, and in fact, if you take a look, it's got the same geologic disconformities that are in the real Grand Canyon. Now, I see it at Disney now. What happens is Walt Disney World has become almost like a reservation vacation. People are rushing so much for their Fast Pass reservations.
ADRs, 180 days in advance.
Yeah, you know, all of these things, that they're not taking a moment to catch their breath and look around them. I tell people, you know, look down, look up, look on the walls. On each floor by the fireplace, on the right-hand side there's a glass display case that has examples from the real Grand Canyon for that particular strata. There on the ground floor, you take a look and you can compare that with what is on the fireplace, so you can say, oh, that is such and such. That is Temple Butte limestone. That is Torrey formation. That's red wall. Whatever. And you can do that. And as you go up each floor, there's a different glass display case there with all of that. But the one thing the fireplace has that the Grand Canyon does not is an intentional hidden Mickey.
Oh, yeah.
So when you're facing the fireplace, on the right-hand side, you go up to where there's a pole just sticking out before the start of the next floor. There's this reddish rock there. There's the famous three-circled Mickey Mouse head. It's right up there. And there are dozens in the lodge. And, in fact, if you go to the concierge desk, they'll give you a hidden Mickey hunt. Now, they don't tell you where those are, but there's riddles there. So I guess that's part of the fun, is you should go out and you should try and solve the riddle, and you can find some of these hidden Mickeys. To me, it's fun to find hidden other things, you know. So there are more than hidden Mickeys to find on property. And by the way, that fireplace is a real working fireplace. It when it opened, it burned wood. However, that caused problems because you see fire coming out of the top. So that bothers people. And also, it creates humidity in the lobby. So now it's a gas fireplace. And we haven't even gotten out of the lobby yet. And there's still more to see because there's up above, you've got those teepee chandeliers. They're 500 pounds each, because Eisner wanted the lobby only to be lit by the chandeliers, not other light poles and things like that, you know, throughout there, just through that, you know, to create, again, that wilderness
feeling.
And so that's actual rawhide that's stretched over the framework and hand-painted again with geometric Native American symbols. And inside each teepee is a bulb fixture that holds 48 light bulbs. And each one provides something like 2,800 watts in there. And they're 10 feet in diameter at the base and 10 feet high at the peak. And around them is this bronze and steel ring. And it has silhouetted buffaloes and Native Americans on horseback. And those were taken from images from photographs from that time period. And behind the desk, you've got that collection of cradle boards. And a cradle board is something that you would put a baby in, you know, and you would tie it on. A mother would put it onto her back or hook it onto a saddle, actually. Left to right, the cradle boards represent the North American tribes of Crow, Apache, Cheyenne, Ute, Kiowa, Navajo, and Comanche. I'm not as old as I thought. Okay, but as amazing as those are, and again, cradle boards, you want to see a cradle board? Here's something people miss. You go see the American Adventure, and you've got those figures along the side. Go take a look at the Native American woman there. That she's supposed to represent Sacagawea, who did the Lewis and Clark expedition.
Mm-hmm.
She's facing, you know, towards the stage, so most of it, you're exiting the stage. Wait a moment and take a look on her back. She's carrying a cradle board because the real Sacagawea gave birth as she was leading the Lewis and Clark expedition. Ah, jeez. Yeah, I'm glad you've talked to me now, you know, because I don't have a girlfriend. I don't have a life. You know, once I get one of those, all of this stuff just dribbles out my ears. So I don't have anything. And as I told you earlier, I went back over my notes. I went back over the notes that I used to do when I did the tours for Disney Adult Discoveries, and that was back in, 1998. Ah! And all of this can come out. One of my favorite things in the lobby, and it's over by the elevators, is the elk tooth dress. And again, this irritates me tremendously, is that Disney won't put up these plaques to explain these things so that people can appreciate them. So you have to depend on somebody like Jim Corcus. It's an elk tooth dress. It's authentic. It's from 1875, believe it or not. It's authentic. Why am I making a big deal about an elk tooth dress, you know? Well, this one obviously belonged to a great hunter's wife. And why would I say that? Because an elk only has two teeth. So an elk tooth dress could take hundreds of teeth to make. So that's an awful lot of elk.
No kidding.
And an elk tooth dress was worn for a special ceremony, like a wedding or a special dance, or when a young girl enters womanhood, whatever. You know, there's display cases all throughout the lobby. There's a display case of moccasins made by the Plains Indian. All of those are authentic. And again, what they did is they had to use their teeth to stretch the leather and things like that. The headdresses in the lobby are actually recreations, because original headdresses were made out of eagle feathers. And Chief would wear that, and supposedly characteristics and the power of the eagle would transfer to the chief. It's illegal now to use eagle feathers, so Imagineers had to take turkey feathers and manipulate the turkey feathers, you know, so that they look like eagle feathers. I have friends who are Imagineers, and they joke and they say, our job is to take old things and make them look new, and new things and make them look old. So that's it. But again, you're in the lobby. The things that catch your attention are those totem poles. Those totem poles are 55 feet high each. And they're actually two sections, because it's going to be hard to find a 55-foot tall cedar tree that you can work with there. It's divided into two 27-foot sections. And they actually had to hollow out the cedar, because some of it was rotten inside and things like that. And then they had to reinforce it with new wood, and then they reinforce it up there against an I-beam and all of that to work. And those were carved by Dwayne Pascoe. Dwayne Pascoe is from Canada and is known as a master carver. He's done a lot of work for private groups and civic groups and things like this. And he studied Northwest Native American culture, because, again, some of those tribes to Canada and things like that. And you have one pole is devoted to the eagle and the other to the raven, because those were the two animals that were most prominent in just about any Northwest Native American cultural mythology. And so Disney wanted them to represent that. And originally the poles faced exactly towards each other because, again, symmetry is a good thing. I like symmetry.
Yeah.
But in Native cultures, that suggests conflict, not harmony. The two totem poles would be battling against each other. So you notice they're placed slightly askew. Not so much that you go, wait a minute, this is completely off, but enough so that you're not causing any problems. They're 3 feet wide at the top. They're 5 feet wide at the bottom. And Pascoe, too, didn't want... You know, you want to be very careful. It's very, the lodge opened, what, 94? Even then, you know, you want to be sensitive to different cultures. So he didn't want to take a particular story, because that might relate to just a specific tribe, or it might be something very sacred to that tribe. These are more pan-coastal interpretations of similar stories.
They're a little bit more generic, right?
Yeah, so they're realistic, but they're not specific. So it's not like, well, this tribe told this story in this way, and this other tribe told that same story, but they told it in this different way. And so he took elements from all of those and blended those together. Carving those two totem poles took 6 months. He had a team, fortunately, helping him, you know, and they start with chainsaws. And then they worked their way down to smaller and smaller carving tools. And these are what are called story poles. There are plaques at the bottom of each pole, And I notice on the internet, as long as you're taking pictures of things, you might as well take pictures of those plaques and post them and send me a copy, because I never wrote down the plaques because they're about one paragraph, and the story for each poles are several paragraphs. And so I have the full story of the poles. The Eagle pole is over by the registration counter, and the Raven pole is over by Whispering Canyon Cafe. And when you're reading a story pole, you read it from the bottom to the top. So over by the Whispering Canyon Cafe, the Raven pole there tells the story of the whale chief. And you'll see that at the bottom is you see that sort of half circle representing the whale. And he had a beautiful daughter, and many of the animals wanted to marry her. So the whale chief held an archery contest, and those who would come closest to the bullseye would win the tournament. Well, the cougar and all of these different animals that tried to do it, none of them really came close to the bullseye, except this little wren hit it right in the bullseye, angered animals tremendously. And so the little wren hid for a while in a little hole. And if you take a look in the totem pole, you'll see the wren hiding up there in the hole. And then Hootis, the bear chief, and his family, his two bear cubs who can transform into humans. See, this all gets very convoluted. Anyway,
it does. There's a story behind every little element.
Right. It takes the wren and his new bride, and they go to a small island where they enjoy the company of the salmon people. And that's not the end of the story, because what Pascoe did is he incorporated several different stories. So at the top of the Raven pole is the story of the raven, which is the traditional story. The raven was considered a trickster animal, just like in Africa you had the trickster rabbit, who later inspired Brer Rabbit and also Bugs Bunny, for that matter. A smaller animal who can outwit physically larger foes simply through his wit and his quickness. The raven story, and this is the traditional story, this is also represented at one of the poles in front of the Canada Pavilion. He sneaks into the Sky Chief's house, and underneath the Sky Chief's bed is this like wooden box, wooden treasure chest, whatever, and Raven pulls out this glowing orb and takes it into the sky, where it shatters and it becomes the sun and the moon and the stars. It lights a darkened world. Great story to go through. How was light brought to the world? For the Native Americans, is through the raven. Now, on the other side over there, by the registration desk, the Eagle Pole tells the story of the bear chief, and the frog tells the bear chief he should hold a feast for his young nephew, the bear club, and a cub, and give him a magnificent gift, and there's this whole shield, and these animals protecting the shield, and it gets very, very convoluted. And then at the top of the pole is another story of Raven, but this is the story of how he released the first humans who ever walked on Earth and protected them as they grew, because when he released them, they were little teeny tiny things, and they were walking on the beach and they needed protection.
Please join us in Episode 5 for the continuation of the Jim Corcus Wilderness Lodge Show. Normally at this point in the show, I come in with an ask, and it's usually to join the MyDVC Points community group on Facebook or contact us in some way. However, today I have a different kind of ask. I'd like you to go to Amazon.com or ThemeParkBrothers.com and look for Jim's books. I know on Amazon his books are available in paper format and in Kindle, and some are even available in Kindle Unlimited if you have that subscription. That's how you can say thank you to Jim and support him to help him do more research and bring more content. Have a magical day, and I'm hoping that the 7-month window has plenty of availability for the resorts that you desire.
Ladies and gentlemen, please watch your head and step as you exit, and take small children by the hand.
Aw, cheer up, Dad. You know I'll come back. With DVC.
My DVC Points is an unofficial Disney-inspired podcast created by fans of Disney Vacation Club. The thoughts expressed in this podcast are personal opinions and personal experiences. My DVC Points is not affiliated with Disney Vacation Club, the Walt Disney Companies, or any subsidiaries. We encourage listeners to contact their DVC guide or member services for official DVC policies.